Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 25 of the PreparedX Podcast. In this one, I interview Francesca Spidileri, and don't quote me on that correct pronunciation, but I apologize, Francesca, if I destroyed your last name there. Anyway, Francesca, I've known for a while. She is a senior fellow for cyber leadership at the Pell Center, which is Salve Regina University in Newport, Rhode Island. And as I mentioned, I've known Francesca for a little over a year now, and I've heard her speak at a number of events on cyber leadership. She's an expert in this field. She does a lot of work in this field, both here in the United States, here in Rhode Island, but also internationally. So she truly is an expert in this particular field. In the interview, we get talking about the importance of cyber preparedness as it relates to leaders within corporations. So if you're one of those leaders or up-and-coming leader, you'll find this very informative. We covered issues that leaders face as it relates to proactive measures with cybersecurity. We spoke a lot about some of the sectors that are doing a lot to try and prepare, and some of those sectors that are not as prepared as they should be. We also got into some legislation, because Francesca knows a lot about that, certainly here in the US, and she also touched on the EU for some of that conversation. Anyway, this really was a good interview, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Here's the interview. Good morning, Francesca. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Rob. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
No problem. And for our audience, before we get started here, could you just introduce yourself and just talk for a few minutes about Francesca?
Sure, I'll be glad to. So I'm currently the Senior Fellow for Cyber Leadership at the Pell Center at South Virginia University, where probably 70% of my job is focused on research. And my research has been mainly focused on cyber leadership development, how we train leaders across sector to understand cyber risks. I've also carried out a lot of research on cybersecurity education in a graduate and undergraduate program across the United States, both in the military and civilian universities. And a more recent interest of mine has been actually looking at cybersecurity at the state level. And so what are states around the United States doing to strengthen their agency cybersecurity posture and to actually turn cybersecurity from a challenge into an opportunity for business development and other growth opportunities. I'm also a cybersecurity subject matter expert on a different project called the Cyber Readiness Index, run out of the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. And this project has developed a methodology to analyze, assess, and evaluate countries' cyber readiness level. And so through this methodology, countries can self-assess, and we also carry out assessment and publish country reports with a wide breadth of issues, from their national cybersecurity strategies, their cybersecurity legislation, law enforcement efforts, to their diplomacy and trade efforts related to cyber, and including even their possible defense and offense capability. So all of those research papers, methodologies, other articles that I write are available on the Pell Center website, and so are accessible for everybody.
That's fantastic. You're very busy, very busy individual then. And we'll make sure we link back to a number of those articles within this podcast. We'll make sure they're available for the audience. And so appreciate you taking the time today. So with regards to your extensive research on cybersecurity, what would you say is the single biggest challenge that leaders from organizations face currently in today's climate?
Well, thanks for that question, Rob, because as I said earlier, this is actually one of the main focus of my research in the past 5 years. And I definitely think that the biggest challenge that most of those senior leaders face today is actually their own attitude towards cybersecurity. I find that most of them still treat cybersecurity as an isolated IT problem that's best left to their already overwhelmed IT department, honestly.
Right.
And many of those leaders also have this natural optimism towards security issues. They think that they are either too small or they don't have anything that is particularly interesting to a group of cyber criminals or that they would make them a target. And because they might have purchased the latest security tool or software and they think they're compliant with specific state or federal government policy, then they think that they are secure. And when you actually combine this attitude with often a lack of understanding about cybersecurity risks, mind that a lot of CEOs are over 60, and a lot of them did not study computer science during their formative years. And this can actually lead them to believe that their company is stronger, more secure than it actually is.
Right.
And I find that even for those younger, senior leaders that did understand and recognize the importance of focusing on cybersecurity, they don't necessarily allocate sufficient resources, both human and financial, to develop a strong team of trusted experts. I was just reading a recent survey that was conducted just this past January, and they found that only 25% of C-level executive and board members actually believe that recruiting and retaining skilled cybersecurity professionals is a critical cybersecurity issue. So they ranked it almost at the bottom of other cybersecurity priorities that they might have.
Sure, sure. Well, that's a great insight from your research in the industry. So why is it important then for the board? I mean, I guess you've covered some of it in terms of the board of directors to understand cybersecurity, because, you know, you have the senior leadership group, you have the CEO and the senior leadership team. But, above that, you have the board of directors, which, again, is probably an aging audience in terms of, you know, understanding cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. So why should they understand the potential impact on their organizations?
Well, because ultimately they are responsible for the cybersecurity posture of the organization, and they will be liable for a major cyber incident. Board of directors oversee risk, and they now need to see cyber risk as a component of their overall enterprise risk management process rather than a compliance issue again. And so board of directors can no longer ignore that clear link between a cyber attack and its impact on customer trust, brand value, stock prices, revenues, profit. We hear a lot about plausible deniability, and that's just no longer acceptable. Like, it's no longer acceptable to not have any awareness about cyber risk and treating cybersecurity as an IT problem. Again, I think CEOs and company boards are accountable for the health of the organization and for setting those levels of acceptable risk for their companies. And they're also responsible for building those teams of trusted experts that then, in turn, will implement, hopefully, a proper security program and regularly report back to the C-suite and the board about the cybersecurity posture health of the company.
And with regards to recent cyber events, recent breaches, are there any lessons that corporate leaders can take away from these most recent events? I guess there's, you know, almost daily there's something going on in terms mm-hmm. of a significant breach. So, you know, in terms of those lessons, are there some lessons that, these leaders can take away from these events?
Certainly. I would say, first of all, that you should understand that it is no longer a matter of if an incident will happen, but just when. And then it goes without saying that they need to understand, again, the threat landscape. They need to be aware of their organization's vulnerabilities and weaknesses so that when an incident does happen, they might be disappointed but not surprised. They should stay up to date with the latest techniques and vulnerabilities, and be proactive in identifying those risks so that, again, they can better plan their defenses and allocate those human and financial resources needed to at least minimize some of those risks. And finally, again, in regards to recent breaches, I can't stress enough the importance of having a clear, practiced, and regularly updated incident response and crisis communication plan. because they need to survive a cyber incident and awfully minimize the damages to its brand value. If you look at events such as Target or OPM, you know, their leaders have been fired, ousted, or forced to resign, not because the incident happened, but because of the poor responses to those incidents.
Sure. Yeah, it's not if, but when. It's certainly poignant, for sure. Part of your current role at the Pell Center is to bring together corporate leaders from various sectors. And I know I've attended a number of those events, and they're excellent events for education, for coordination, and bringing those different sectors together and those different experts to talk about cybersecurity and leadership. With regards to those sectors, which ones do you see that are more proactive in terms of cyber preparedness?
Well, thank you, Robin. We love having you every time you come. When I look at all the sectors, I would say the financial sector, for sure, it's probably the most proactive. But that's I think it's likely because they're also one of the most regulated ones. I would say the defense sector is also extremely engaged and proactive for obvious reason. But on the other hand, the one that I'm probably most concerned about, and because it should be one of the sectors most proactive, but so far has failed to put cyber security on top of their preparedness agenda, is the healthcare sector. And you know, as this industry moves towards electronic health records, increased interoperability, we enter the Internet of Things, cybersecurity will become an increased organizational concern, especially after the high-profile health data breaches we've seen at Anthem, Blue Cross, and Blue Shield, among others, in recent years. And that shows you that this sector is really one of the most vulnerable to cybercrime, because you think about the personal health information that they store in their database and the fact that medical identities have actually become an even more precious commodity on the black market than your credit card, my Visa,
right,
your MasterCard.
Sure.
And as I said earlier, when it comes to cybersecurity, healthcare organizations, I think, are by far the most porous and the least prepared ones.
I know you do a fair amount of research and a fair amount of work with regards to the regulation around cybersecurity, the legislation piece. Certainly, I know you're heavily involved in that here in the state, and you're very familiar with it around the country here in the United States. So, you know, can you talk about some of the more important pieces of legislation that are either being passed right now or are being spoken about, either here in Rhode Island or other parts of the U.S.?
Yeah, certainly. So I would point out that cybersecurity legislation has actually stalled in Congress, in the U.S. Congress, for many years. And that's one of the reasons why states have taken on this challenge to pass some bits and pieces of legislation, especially around data breach notification, specific cyber crimes, best practices they're trying to impose on their state agencies, at least. Unfortunately, in many states, like in many private organizations we talked about, senior leaders still treat cybersecurity as an IT problem. And so even legislators often defer to the state CIO or, you know, IT department. And when I talk to legislators, I try to characterize this as another business risk the states have to address. In Rhode Island, for example, a couple of years ago, we noticed that the data breach law had not been updated since 2005. And I reached out to two legislators I knew had an interest in this topic, and I brought them together. We brought also together other stakeholders in the fields, with, you know, executive from law enforcement, healthcare, financial sector. And together, in a few weeks, we came up with a new draft legislation that was not only updating the old law and adding, for example, your healthcare records are part of your personally identifiable information, your passwords and other, again, electronic records that before were not even considered by this law. But it also offered a clear course of action for businesses and agencies that might get breached. And that same year, 31 states, other states, proposed updates to their data breach notification law, and only two passed, being, Rhode Island one of them. I think more states have been successful this year. I've seen New York, Massachusetts, I think Connecticut. Again, so those are probably the laws that I see the most. Some are, you know, one big law. It's called an identity, you know, theft and breach law. Some are developed in different pieces. One has to do with notification. One has to do with what exact information consists you know, of your personal identifiable information. There's been a lot of interest about health records again. But again, when you see almost half of the states are actually still not paying enough attention.
Right.
And one of the things that gets legislator attention is actually those high-profile data breaches. And unfortunately or fortunately, we've had plenty of those in recent years. It does often take a data breach for a lawmaker to pass significant legislation. Another example that comes to mind is the high-profile data breach of the South Carolina Department of Revenue in 2012. And it's only after that high profile breach, which before OPM was the largest breach that happened to a government agency, it's only after that that the South Carolina legislature passed a bill that made the CISO and the chief privacy officer position a legislative requirement.
And just to add on to that, I mean, I know you travel a fair bit overseas. Do you see or do you get involved in much legislation for in other countries? I know you mentioned you look at other nations around mm-hmm. the world as part of one of your roles. You know, in general terms, what are other countries? Where are other countries at compared to the U.S.?
Certainly. So one of the indices in the Cyber Readiness Index methodology is actually around legislation. And so we look at what kind of laws countries have passed or updated, first of all, to provide a legal framework. Because often we might be aware of the crimes, but there not might be laws to persecute the criminals. And one of the other issues we often find is that even those countries that have laws, especially in Latin America, they have passed a lot of computer crime-related laws, but then they might not have the financial resources, or they have not spent enough training persecutor, lawyers, police officers,
right,
forensics, to actually do the investigation and persecute the crime. So I would say European countries are probably the most advanced laws. But, you know, you're familiar, Europe focuses a lot on regulation.
Sure.
So I would say
yep.
The EU in general is imposing a lot of those regulations, and European countries are adopting a lot of pretty strict cybersecurity-related law. And the interesting fact there is that sometimes actually those laws might go against, you know, fair market and business. And so some of those things are being currently discussed and how it might affect businesses that do business across borders. I would say, again, one thing that it's a similar challenge across is that a lot of those legislators are poorly educated on these issues, regardless of their party in their country. And few of them have taken the time to understand how cybersecurity would actually help their state or country, both economically and from a security standpoint. And so again, a lot of the cybersecurity bills have been stalled because it comes down to those people that have taken the time to educate themselves and those that haven't.
Thank you for that. I mean, again, you got a lot of experience, you know, across the globe, really. So we appreciate that that feedback there. So, in terms of the future, in your experience, in your knowledge, and your extensive research, what does the future hold for corporations that don't take a proactive stance on cybersecurity?
Well, honestly, I don't think that any business of any size or in any sector has a choice about not being proactive. They need to be, and they need to prepare for data breaches, business interruptions, disruption of service, and even increasingly destruction of property, like we saw with Saudi Aramco and Stuxnet and the recent DDoS attack against DIN. Cyber risk, again, affect all industries and all markets and can represent a real existential threat, especially for smaller companies that have limited resources and might only be focusing on a specific line of products or services. And a cyber attack could really put them out of business.
And so as we start to wrap up here, and again, I know from visiting the Pell Center and the program that you've set up over the last number of years now, that there's great collaboration there between corporations and even government agencies. And I was very impressed over the last, I guess, year and a half now since I've been going to the events there. So, many larger organizations, as we've seen, either through these events or as we know, I mean, we work with larger organizations as well that have the resources to manage cybersecurity, and whether they do it well or in some cases, as we know, not so well. But those that do take a proactive manner often, proactive approach, often have those resources. But what about those, mid-sized organizations that, again, maybe as not as well educated, and some even smaller businesses that, need to have, something in place? What resources and tools, and what do you see out there that are available, and why is it important for them to collaborate?
Right. So again, thank you for that question, and love that you mentioned the importance of collaboration, because that can really be a force multiplier, especially in smaller states and communities where you have the opportunity to meet with all the stakeholders, whether in law enforcement, private, public sector. And so attending meetings such as the ones we have at the Pell Center, or joining one of the ISACs, the Information Security and Analysis Centers, or other partnership, can be really important for especially smaller businesses that might not have the resources, and because that's another way for them to learn about what some of the common risks are. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. But again, I think they all need to realize that cyber risk, like all risk, cannot be completely eliminated, but it can be managed. And first of all, through informed decision-making processes, planning, the appropriate allocation of resources, even when those resources are limited. And there are plenty of tools and resources out there, a lot at no cost. One of the papers I published in September at the Pell Center, which is available on our website, actually provides an overview of all those existing frameworks and reference guides and toolkits and other resources that organizations can consult, so they can first and foremost stay informed about cyber threats. They can better assess their own cyber preparedness levels. Some of those framework helps develop and update comprehensive cyber risk management strategies. Some other toolkits help identify and address weaknesses and shortcomings within an organization. And they can also learn about some of the best practices in their industries and some of the effective mechanisms used by similar organizations to fight cyber threats. Again, all those resources are actually free and available online by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, COBIT. There's a lot of standards available out there that can be simply downloaded, and you might need a little help to understand and navigate them, but the resources are there. And while one size does not fit all, again, there are plenty of independently validated best practices, security controls, assessment tools, reference guides, other benchmarks that can help mid-sized and smaller businesses in defending their organization, but also in being more proactive and prepared to respond to a potential data breach or other cyber attack. Again, I would emphasize the importance of collaboration and using some of the resources available out there before they actually go and hire a cybersecurity consultant or buy more pieces of technology,
right,
thinking that that's just going to solve
sure.
all of their problems.
Right. Yeah. I know, that's excellent. Well, I can tell you this has been very informative. We really appreciate you. I know you got a busy schedule ahead of you, Francesca. So thank you for taking the time today to go through this interview. Just before we wrap up here, do you have any final comments with regards to the subject, or for our listeners as well? How can they get a hold of you? We will add your contact information, obviously, at the bottom of the podcast. But if you can just let people know how they can get a hold of you, and any final comments, please.
Well, first of all, Rob, thank you again. I really enjoy working with you and with your company to raise awareness across Rhode Island and the United States in general. And you and I both travel internationally, so I think spreading the good words is really important. I would actually ask your viewers and listeners to get in touch with me, with you, to let us know what are some of those challenges they're facing so that we can better refine our events, that we can include some other topics in our research. The Pell Center is a nonprofit organization and research institute, so we are happy to take on additional projects. We are partnering with a lot of organizations in Rhode Island and across the country, and we invite additional input and feedback and participation from your listeners. So I will not spell my email right now because it's too long, but please share it on your website
with
everybody.
Yeah.
They can get in touch with me. I'm pretty good at getting back to everybody. This is an open invitation also to participate to our event at the Pell Center, which are also free of charge. We have a rich calendar of events planned for the spring, which will be available on our website soon. We have two more events for this year, in November and in December. Again, the information are on our website. The events are open to all businesses and organizations in Rhode Island and New England. And sometimes when we can, we also offer it through WebEx so they can connect remotely as well. And so with that, again, it's an open invitation to get in touch with us, participate to our events, and suggest new topics of research.
That's excellent. Again, thank you for your time today, Francesca, and safe travels wherever you may be heading soon, and hopefully we'll see you real soon.
Thank you, and you too.
Thank you. Yeah.
And happy holidays.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Bye.
You too. Bye. Bye. Well, that's it for episode 25 of the PreparedX podcast. I do hope you enjoyed this episode. I think Francesca was, really good in this one, and I hope you got a lot out of it. If you did, please share it on podcast and rate us on iTunes. Share the podcast with your colleagues. We'd appreciate that. I'd also like you to check out our recent PreparedX blogs via preparedx.com. That's PreparedX, that's preparedex.com. And if you haven't already, sign up for our bi-monthly newsletter, because we send a tremendous amount of information out, articles as well as other resources that you'll find very useful. Well, that's it. Until next time, have a safe and productive day. Take care.